Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. It's a bunch of baseball nerds talking about the Phillies on radio.com and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Yo! It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. And Jack, I'm just excited that I didn't have to do a super angry yo, which felt like it was where we were going. And then Andrew Knapp somehow made an amazing play at the plate. The great Andrew Knapp made a play at the plate. And I'm still upset with the weekend, but I'm like 5% less upset, Jack.
Because your guy, Andrew Knapp, saved the season?
Love that guy, man. I mean, I've always said you don't get better at backup catcher than Andrew Knapp. That's what I've always said.
I just want to know where you were when Nappy saved the season. I mean, Nappy literally out of the playbook of Cameron Rupp and Tyler Goodell. I mean, they saved the Phillies season last night in a series where they should have taken frickin' 2-3. I mean, whatever. They should have taken 2-3. I'm happy they won last night. It felt like a season saver, but like, I don't know. I can't tell if I'm mad that they won 2-3 or they lost 2-3, or that I think they're trending in the right direction because they really should have won 2-3.
I love that that's even a thought in your mind. I'm incredibly mad they lost 2-3. Like, that's sad. Look, first of all, just to show up for that Friday game after what you did in Buffalo on Thursday to lose that second game the way you did, and then just get boat raced 11-2, no shot. Nola looked awful. Like, I don't know. That in and of itself felt to me incredibly, incredibly disappointing. But then on Saturday to come out and get the 4-0 lead and just do it again, man. We've already had three losses like that this year, Jack. That's our third gut punch loss of the season.
I know.
More in the disgruntled than happy camp.
Well, I mean, they only had leads in all seven of their last seven losses.
It's so unbelievable. It is so hard to believe that that is a possible thing that could have happened.
It shouldn't be possible. Like, here's the most frustrating part of this, and for me, it's the fact that this team is definitely good. Like, they're definitely a good baseball team, except for the one thing they need to hold leads. It's like, if Matt Klentak, I know, whatever, Klentak, but like, if he didn't completely botch this offseason, like, we wouldn't feel like we're wasting a Phillies team. Like, it feels, for as excited as I am to sit down every night, and honestly, if we did the podcast Sunday or whatever, like, I had this whole thing planned where, because like, honestly, I sit down every night and I'm excited and I'm giddy and I talk myself into the team, and then like 3 hours later, it's just pure torture. Like, it's I feel like an idiot. I feel like an idiot every single time I sit down when I watch the Phils. But like, if they just addressed the bullpen in the offseason and they didn't have to make these two panicky trades this weekend, it's like we're looking at a team that we could get really excited about. We're looking at a team that is not two games out from the eighth wild card spot. Like, we're looking at a team that we can be talking about, could this team make a legitimate run? Could they get to the NLCS? Because the offense is that good. The starting staff has been good enough. I mean, Nolan and Wheeler have been everything as advertised. I mean, Wheeler, I think he's actually been better than advertised. I mean, he's not striking guys out, but he's going deep in ball games and giving you a chance like he did on Saturday. It's just the bullpen is such a freaking cluster bleep that, like, you can't even fully buy into anything they do. I mean, Bryce is talking about going on and winning 9 of 10. It's like, how? How is this team going to win 9 of 10?
Yeah, well, they haven't won 5 in a row since 2018, Bryce. Like, let's worry about getting a 5 in a row before we start talking about 9 and 10. But the craziest thing about that statement, too, is that he's flat out wrong. Like, they don't actually even need to win 9 of 10. That's how crazy this playoff setup is. I mean, right now, 2 of the 10,000 teams making the playoffs in the National League right now are sub-500 teams, and one of them is a 500 team. I mean, like, the Phillies aren't at all even close to out of it, even though it feels like they should be. And to your point, Jack, I would go so far as to say that if they had a major league capable bullpen, I'm not even talking about, you know, one of the best pens in the league or something, a major league capable bullpen, they're in first place right now. First place. Like, it's that big a difference. It's that's how much this has mattered. They are historically bad as a bullpen. And I know we've said this before, but you were just kind of hitting on something that I think is really, so far through 24 games, been the theme of this team this season, is that it's not even fun to watch because you can never enjoy it because you're always waiting for the hammer to fall. Like, it sucks a lot of the fun out of watching this team because the offense is, you always know that there is not just the potential, but the likelihood that bullpen's going to, it's all going to come crashing down, Jack. It really has sucked some of the fun out of the season.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm still, like, I don't know. I'm
still loving watching them. I'm so excited and all that. It's great to have baseball back. But you know what I'm saying? Like, when you watch these games, like, it does, like, you just can't get as invested in a you know, big inning or early lead or whatever because you're just always dreading.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. It's like, they get a 4-2 lead and all of a sudden you're just holding on to your butt. Like because you don't know. You're just expecting them to blow it, which is a really frustrating way to live, especially with your baseball team. Like, it's just,
yes.
it's a frustrating way to go about life. And the thing is, like, me and you are very similar, and I'm sure the High Hopes listeners are the exact same way. Like, we live and die with this team. Like, I don't really get mad about sporting events anymore. Like, I'll get my small little bursts out, like when the Eagles lose or something goes wrong. Sixers, like, they've just killed me from inside. Like,
I'm dead inside with this. Honestly, like, I was fine with them getting swept. Like, I didn't even care. I'm so beaten down and dead with that team.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, the Phillies, it makes me legitimately angry. Like, I usually get over losses in a half hour. I have a half hour rule where I just get over it and whatnot. I mean, Saturday night, obviously I had a few. Pivetta got traded. They blew a game.
Oh, we'll get there.
I had money on the game, and they lost, and I was just I finished a pint of Ben and Jerry's. I ate like 4 mochis.
Oh my god,
dude! It was dark.
It was one of those nights.
Yeah.
It was like the beginning of a rom com when the girl breaks up with the guy and he's just spending like weeks at home by himself. That was you.
Yeah, I've grown a full beard. It's just, yeah, it was a Saturday was a really, really dark night. It was just a really, really, really dark night. And
I had the same reaction, for what it's worth. It was funny because it wasn't as bad a loss as the Toronto one where they're up 7-0, or that Baltimore one in that crazy game with the Segura, you know, missing the ball. But it felt worse to me because it was just like almost like a, you got to be bleeping me. Like, you have to be kidding. Really? Again?
Yeah. I mean, because it's just like, how much pain are we supposed to take here? Like, I know the Mets have it bad and I get it, but it's like, just, I feel like no one loses harder than this team. Like,
I agree.
They just invent ways to lose. And now they, why did they put together the bullpen the way they did? Like, it just,
two things. It's Matt Klentak and John Middleton. They both are to blame. And again, and we'll get to this trade for many portions of it, but this trade is a perfect example. The idea that they basically gave away Connor Siebold because they wanted money back, staying over the tax. It's just like, it's perpetual. It's in everything. It's ruining everything, Jack.
Yeah. Well, at least they won on Sunday.
All right, let's talk about the trade first, and then we'll get to the games, because the trade did really kind of happen, you know, during the Friday night game.
Yeah, found out I honestly stopped paying attention after that. I was just
well, let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's start with the most important part, and then we'll get to the actual important parts. I mean, the floor is yours, Jack. Nick Pivetta is no longer a Philly.
I know, but I will say that Chaim wanting Nick Pivetta, I think, is a sign that he's definitely good.
It was definitely the best thing that could ever happen to you, for what it's worth.
I mean, how long did we beg for the Phillies to hire Chaim Bloom? I mean,
it was all we wanted. It was all we cared about. Like, it was our whole thing.
Right. And this guy sees the spin rates, sees the talent right in front of him, and says, you know what? I'm going to take a shot. I mean, they're going to have to give up a better package to get our two pretty average major league relievers. And I'm going to take back a guy with a chance to be really good in Nick Pivetta, and a guy in Connor Siebold who I think could be a 4-5 in a rotation. But yeah, losing Pivetta hurts. Obviously, those who listen to this podcast, I mean, Nick Pivetta is my favorite Philly. And I know that sounds ridiculous and whatnot, but let's go into inside Jack's shoes for a second.
Are we sure we want to do that? It seems a little dangerous in there.
Yeah, well, it's there's a lot going on, but let's just take this through in, like, step into my shoes for a second. I'm a young man trying to start out in this crazy sports media field. You know, I think I know baseball. Played it my whole life. Pitched in college. Pitched poorly in college. Was physically present for 2 years of college baseball. Kept the book for 53 straight PSAC games. And I'm trying to break into the media, right? And I'm trying to you know, what's going to be my what's going to be the way that I stick out? And, you know, I started developing a little following with the Phils. You know, they're my favorite team. I live and die with their games. Like, I didn't watch much during the rebuild because I was trying to, you know, be a member of that Phillies team. So, you know, I start here, and Nick Pivetta comes up, and I'm like, this guy actually has stuff. You know, they had brought up Sean O'Sullivan and just dog crap pitchers over and over and over again. Just absolute terrible pitchers. And then I see Nick Pivetta, and I'm like, this guy has talent. This guy has stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna hitch my wagon to this guy. I believe in this guy a little bit. Nola, Pivetta. Anyway, then he looks pretty good in 2017 to finish the season well, and everyone in the last offseason heading into 2018 was writing about Nick Pivetta. Actually, it was 2019 was breakout Pivetta.
Yes, heading into 2019. That offseason, the 2018-2019 offseason.
Yes, 2018 was pretty good.
Everyone was in. I mean, like, it was a thing, remember? I mean, he was getting drafted in the mid-rounds of fantasy drafts. Like,
the Phillies made
in on it.
The Phillies made him untouchable in trade.
The Phillies made him untouchable. Remember those rumors? He was untouchable. He was their number two starter to start the season.
Yeah. And is that my fault? Probably. I mean,
you played a role.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that if you're ever looking to break in and stick out, like, just go all in on guys and choose wisely. I did not choose wisely. I put not all my eggs. I mean, it's unfortunate that, like, I can't tweet anything without people being like, well, you like Pivetta. And it's like, oh my God, whatever. But, like, I loved him. I really did. And I hitched my brand to hashtag breakout Pivetta. And I would talk about it on the radio, talk about it on High Hopes. I would tweet about it. And unfortunately, everyone started buying in. And he did not hold up his end of the bargain, I would say. And
yeah, put it that way.
I met him in spring training, and that was great.
That was the peak.
Yes, that was the peak. But listen, he was my favorite Philly. I had a lot invested in breakout Pivetta. If he ended up being really good, it would have been a great, you know, a feather in my cap. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And I know it didn't work out that way. I'm not one of those guys that doesn't admit when he was wrong. I was wrong. Now, I still think there's talent in there. And I think he could be good. And
the fact that Chaim Bloom traded, you don't need to say it anymore.
Right,
like, Bloom, if Chaim Bloom wants anything to do with him, there's at least something there.
Yeah, Chaim wanted him, which means breakout Pivetta was kind of right. So
it's the most perfect thing that could have happened for you. Yeah. I will it is way better than him being on the Phillies for you.
Well, what if Haim sucks? I mean, Haim could be bad.
Possible.
I don't think
we
he's
don't
bad. Yeah, I don't think he's bad at all.
It's highly unlikely, but it's possible.
Highly unlikely. And maybe this is the move that gets him back to Philadelphia once they fire him in 3 years. But breakup of it is over. And honestly, it feels like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders.
That was honestly my first thought.
Like it's, but I was
what a
very
relief
down.
Was my first thought. What a relief for Jack.
Oh my gosh. It's like now I don't, now people are going to bring it up, but now it's not like I got to watch him get shelled. And like no one's really going to be paying attention to Red Sox games to see if he's going to do well and tweet at me. Well, they might now, but. I will be watching Red Sox games to see how he does. And yeah, you know, it's over. I'm glad it's over. I hope we can all move on and, you know, people can think I know baseball again because I got one pitcher wrong. Sue me. But I'm going to miss him. I'm not really going to miss him, but I'm wishing him all the best
in
Boston.
You'll miss the idea of him.
Yes.
That's for
sure. I'm wishing him the best in Boston. I am not rooting for Brandon Workman or Heath Embry to fail because I care about the Phillies more than I care about Nick Pivetta. I know some people don't believe that, but it's true. And honestly, this is the God's honest truth. We never lie to the High Hopes listeners. That is what this podcast is all about. I'm more upset about Seabold being a part of it. And
wow, that is a big admission, my friend.
I really liked Connor Seabold. I really did. I thought he was a couple mechanical changes away from having a wipeout slider with a jumpy fastball and a good feel for a changeup. Like, I really liked the upside of Connor Seabold. And just the fact, then this is the bigger problem with the trade for me. I think it was a horrible trade.
It was a horrendous trade. Like, embarrassing trade, as far as I'm concerned.
And those, listen, Hembry and Workman will help the Phillies. There's no doubt about it.
They're major league relievers. They're better than what we had. There's no question.
They're nothing crazy. I mean, they're
Workman's had a good year. Like the last year, Workman has been a good pitcher, but they're not like elite relievers.
Elite relievers.
Elite relievers.
Yeah. So to have to save or have to get back $815,000 because we don't want to go over the luxury tax is just a freaking joke, man.
It's an embarrassment. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing as a Philadelphia Phillies fan in a big market.
It's like, what are we even doing here? You know, are we
like Royals? Are we the Royals, you know, won a World Series more recently than we did. But you know what I'm saying? Like, are we those teams?
The small market Phillies. It's like we're seriously worried about this luxury tax when again it's easy. It should theoretically be easy to stay under next season. Like there's almost $45 million coming off the books. If you go over this year, you should be able to stay under next year unless they're planning on going out and just continuing to buy. I don't know if they are, but it's just frustrating. It's just beyond frustrating that they have to give up a guy in Connor Seabold who could be a rotation piece and Nick Pivetta for two journeyman-ish kind of relievers just to save $800,000.
Only one who's signed past this season.
Right.
You're talking a 30-game rental, 35-game rental. Like, that's crazy town.
You're getting Brandon Workman for 35 games in a season where you're not winning the World Series.
Yes. And so, first and foremost, what you just mentioned, the idea of trading potential assets down the road, particularly Seabold, for any sort of rental for this sham of a season where you have no chance to win the World Series is malpractice, period, end of story. To have to get the money back, and the reason they gave up Seabold, they're not giving up Seabold if they're not asking for the money back. They could have given up a worse prospect. They gave up a better prospect so they could get money back. Think about that. That is the type of thing that small market teams do. It's a joke. We should all be embarrassed by it. Every day that Matt Klentak is the general manager of this team is a day that this team has no future. That's how I feel about Matt Klentak. That's how I feel about the Phillies right now. Like, this guy has to go right now.
Yeah.
And the idea that he's making trades with Brian Cashman and Chaim Bloom, it's like, oh my God. It's like asking my daughter to try and make a trade with a grown adult. Like, what are we doing?
Well, I think Klentak's a disaster, but it's also a mandate by Middleton. Like, I don't know how much.
Well, I know. That's why I mentioned Middleton before. I agree that the luxury tax part of it is a Middleton thing. I get that. I'm not just saying Klentak for the luxury tax part. That's why I always bring Middleton into it, because I think the luxury tax part is a joke, but also just the general idea that Matt Klentak is trading away assets for the future for stopgap bullpen pieces right now does not get me excited, especially because this bullpen is going to suck anyway, man. Like, maybe they're going to go from historically bad to just bad. Look, we already saw it. Brandon Workman is not at a sterling entrance into Philly, and I'm not, you know, two outings, whatever. But, like, these guys are not changing the season. This is not something where all of a sudden this bullpen is going to be dynamite or whatever. Quickly. I just want to comment on Pivetta, and then we'll get back to this trade. But much like you and Nick Pivetta, that's what I did with Andrew Knapp. I've tied myself to his career, and I'm very excited about how great he's doing.
Yes.
Kidding.
Correct.
But here's what I'll say about Pivetta, and I honestly believe this, and I think it's just another ding on Matt Klentak, that the Phillies failed Nick Pivetta a lot more than Nick Pivetta failed the Phillies. And I guarantee you there are a lot of people, everybody was like, yeah, you got rid of Pivetta. That's so smart. Let's get rid of him. The fact that Chaim Bloom is coming in and taking Pivetta from the Phillies just shows that the Phillies failed with him. And look, maybe he never turns into anything, but there were pieces there that they could work with, and they didn't. They didn't develop him. They didn't turn him into anything. And now he's in Boston. And that's fine. Again, at this point, I was fine to never see Nick Pivetta pitching in for the Phillies. Like, it was too far gone. But don't act like this is some genius move getting rid of Pivetta. It's not. It's basically a symbol of failure is what it is.
Yeah, and it was especially rude that they gave his number away right away to Heath Embry. I thought that was just disrespectful.
It certainly didn't help you out that Heath Embry was dynamite in his first outing.
Yeah,
40.
Yeah, and
so a bunch of this guy's so much better than Pivetta tweets.
Yeah, well, I will say that it's just bad that a guy that you thought was a number two and you wouldn't trade for anyone a year ago, you're having to package
exactly.
with Connor Siebold to get some stopgap bullpen pieces, like. I don't know. I think Pivetta ultimately failed himself by not getting better, and you know, I don't know how much to fully blame on the Phillies, but their misevaluation is just, I mean, just that's a total whiff. Like, that's just a total whiff. For as much as you want to make fun of me about Pivetta, that's fine. But like, my whole point was like, sure, be mad at me, but the Phillies believed in Nick Pivetta. This was not just me. I didn't make him the number two starter. I did not trade him for anything. I didn't make him untouchable in trades. I didn't do all this stuff to prop up Pivetta. All I did was believe in spin rates and his 97-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, that's all I believed in. The Phillies legitimately were all in. Now, could it have been their fault because they're listening to IOPS too much because they're big fans, probably? Yeah, it could be their fault. I don't think
they're not listening enough, Jack, as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree. If they were listening, they would know that Chaim should be the general manager right now.
Yes.
But I can't wait for I truly can't wait for
I'm honestly at the point where I'm at anyone but Klentak. I guess Dave Dombrowski is like the one name that comes to mind that would
I'm terrified.
Be a disaster for me.
No, I'm
but
terrified.
Like, I'm just so out. Again, like, it's just every day and every move and all this stuff, you just see a guy who's overmatched. Look, we don't need to go down the Matt Klentak hole again. Like, I think everyone knows where he's standing. We're not going to stop talking about it because until that guy's not the general manager of this team, my opinion of this organization will be worse than it will be the day he's gone. Like, that's just how I feel. Like, as long as John Middleton employs that guy and believes in that guy in any way, shape, or form, like, then I know the power structure of my favorite team is never going to be successful. So that's how I feel. I need changes, but.
Dude, he had to give up. He gave up a legitimate bullpen prospect.
Yeah, for a guy who got DFA.
Yeah, a guy got DFA.
What
who's,
are we doing?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, David Hale's fine. He's fine. He's okay. He got DFA'd.
Yeah. Hey, we'll give you a player to be named later.
Yes, that's a we'll give you cash or something. I know the Phillies are too cheap, but that's what that type of deal is. Like,
yeah. And now the Yankees will have Addison Russ throw like 50% splitters and.
Oh, you know he's gonna be nasty there. He's gonna be great. It's gonna be, you know, setting up whatever other amazing young reliever decides to be their closer someday or whatever. When Chapman, I mean, it's just what it is. He'll probably be setting up for Chapman like next year. It'll be great.
We'll see. There's two things. I'm one, nervous to see what they do for the rest of this trade, like how they're going to operate. Like, is this their move or are they going to make something else? I don't know. I'm worried to see what they're going to.
Well, did you see what Jeff Passan suggested?
No.
Well, Jeff Passan said if they have a bad week this week, he said if they lose the majority of games to Washington and Atlanta, there are a lot of people around baseball who believe that they would, and I do not think they will. I don't think there's any way that you make these moves and then do such an about face. And Passan mentions that it would be a massive about face. But if they have a really bad week, he's like, I wouldn't put it past them to trade Romuto.
Wow.
That he's an asset and that, you know, if they're out of it, if they're done, but he's like, it would be really hard for the organization to do that considering what their fan base. And he even had signed JT in the article, like how the fans are yelling sign JT, which well done, everybody. It's going national, the sign JT thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any way they become sellers over the next week, even if they lose 5 of 6, like it just, I think mentality wise, like essentially if they become sellers, if they trade JT, whether or not it's a smart baseball move, considering the position they're in, like Matt Klentak is basically admitting failure at that point. He's basically admitting, all right, we were supposed to contend. And now I failed. So I don't think it's going to happen. I think Matt Klentak, part of the impetus for making these trades or fixing up the bullpen is I do think that his job is on the line and I think he's trying to save it. So I think it's far more likely he adds more than subtracts. But man, I'm terrified that he's going to give something away for another asset that's not going to make this team enough better. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know what I don't want? I don't want Matt Klentak making a JT Realmuto trade.
You know? I don't want Matt Klentak making any trades. Again, I don't want him making any roster decisions. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. Imagine if they tell Bryce, like, hey, we're trading JT.
I know. Can you imagine?
Oh my gosh, I would love to be a fly on the wall. I mean, I feel like don't you kind of feel like Bryce is about to snap?
I wouldn't blame him.
I feel like
he looks angry. He does. He looks angrier. Well, and Joe, we've talked about this before, but he doesn't look like he's having a ton of fun.
Well, and Joe Girardi said, I guess he was like dog tired. That's why he gave him the day off.
Yeah,
it feels like Bryce is kind of wearing the whole team on his back. Or that's the way.
Well, he's certainly put them on his back so far this season. So yeah. I'm sure you feel that when. Yeah. Two guys are literally carrying the team for stretches. I mean,
well,
that's tough.
Well, three, Nappy.
Of course. Terrible job by me. Well, I should have said JT and Harper are like helping carry the team.
Well,
what I should have.
I mean, they could trade JT and then just make Nappy full-time catcher.
Well, that's really the point there, right? I mean, why even sign JT? We're good.
Girardi literally said in the manager show yesterday that he is doing what he can to get Andrew Knapp in the lineup, and I just could not believe
those.
I mean, it's like it kind of makes sense. Here's the thing.
Of course it does. He's hitting.
Yeah, but he's still like it's still not like impressive. It's still singles. He's not like launching balls. I mean, it's still Nappy. I'm happy, but don't get me wrong. Like, good for
good
him.
Good at bats, Jack. Good at bats. Look, I'll
eye.
Take him over Scott
eye.
Kingery all day, every day. How
That's
about that?
Depressing. What if Klentak is playing chess while everyone's playing checkers, and he traded for Workman and Hembree a week early just to flip him at the deadline for more than Pivetta and Siebel?
That was actually something that was suggested too. Was that if they become sellers, that Workman would be an asset they could sell. Jay Bruce, like Passan, had a whole list of the idea that. If the Phillies wanted to be sellers, they really do have assets that they could sell. But again, to your point, like, I don't want Matt Klentak doing that. Like, I don't want him in charge of this. I'm so beaten down by Matt Klentak, Jack.
Dude,
I really am.
Like, they got, like, J.D. Hammer for Pat Neshek in a normal year. And, like, J.D. Hammer's not anything. They had to give up Pivetta and Siebold in a year that doesn't really matter for...
A joke of a year. Yes.
Oh, whatever. Weird value. But like, listen,
right.
I'm not worried about them selling because I got to be honest with you. I think they're about to go on a run. I really do. Like,
there he is.
Oh,
there
dude,
he is.
They're going
there
on a
is.
Run. Last night's game was a
season turner.
A shot in the arm. It's time to go on a run. Bryce set the tone when he said we got to win 9 of 10. Now they probably won't win 9 of 10, but I think they're going to turn the season around. I think that was a legitimate. Jolt for this baseball team. Hembree looks really good. Workman's a work in progress, which is a little terrible and doesn't make me feel great. The curveball, can we just find the release point, Brandon? Or are we just going to throw worm burners like Donovan? Like, how would you find the release point on the one pitch you've thrown your whole life? Well, Hembree looked good. They have legitimate bullpen pieces now. We got to get Neris on track. But when you win a game
Neris
like...
Neris is a disaster,
yeah,
Jack.
Neris is making me nervous because the splitter's not splitting, James.
He's tipping it off or something. I mean, no one's swinging at it.
I don't think it's moving. It's not possible.
To get no swings and misses, like he had no swings and misses on it in the last outing, zero. It's crazy.
Well, I don't know. Hector goes through these things though. That's
he does.
That's what sucks.
Look,
about
he got sent down to the minors. Like we know last year. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago. But yeah,
2 years ago. Yes,
it's a little frustrating with Hector, but I think he's just so streaky. I trust that he'll get back on track. Jose Alvarez, hopefully he's on the way back. You know, they had to put him on the 10-day IL. I don't know, like that. We kind of said it last year. Actually, we definitely said it last year after the Harper walk off. But those kind of wins can kind of galvanize a locker room. I don't know. I liked it. I liked the energy after it. I liked
where. How many times have we done this? How many times have you and I talked on this very podcast and been like, this is the one, the season's turning around. There's a season turnaround win right here. Doesn't happen that often, Jack.
One of them's got to be right. One of them's got to be right.
Like, I remember the Bryce Grand Slam and us having to re-record after we had done it because we thought they were losing and the excitement, and this is the moment. They're going to turn it around. And, yeah, they fillied out after that.
I know. And the bullpen's still bad. But
it's horrendous.
The starting staff is better. The lineups is better. And they have some competent bullpen pieces down there now. There's some signs for a turnaround. They should have won two.
The run is coming.
They should have won 2 or 3 in Atlanta.
Ah!
You know that. They should have won 2 or 3 in Atlanta. If they won 2 or 3.
They should win 2 or 3 everywhere. They blow everything.
Okay, but guess what? Heath Embry and Brandon Workman and David Hale are here now. They weren't here last week.
Oh, goodness. The power trio.
If they were in the Blue Jays series, they win probably both of those games. This team's going on a run. I'm telling you right now.
You know when they win the Blue Jays series? If they had the Blue Jays bullpen. Give me Jason Romano and those guys and we'll be fine.
They don't have the Blue Jays bullpen. But at 30 minutes and 17 seconds into this podcast, I'm telling you right now, this team is going on a run. I don't care if you laugh at me. I don't care if anyone out there laughs at me. This team is going on a run.
Okay. Okay. Hey, Jack, let me put it this way. I really hope you're right. There's nothing I want more than this team to go on a run. I don't see it right now, man. I don't see it. I hope. Look, you got high hopes, which
always.
I appreciate.
Doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't. Well, speaking of high hopes, there are a couple things I want to get into from the games that we, you know, kind of been talking macro. But high hopes, if we want to get real with high hopes, the thing that right now I am most excited about is that Alec Bohm is a hitting machine, Jack.
Yeah.
He's now, granted, a borderline disastrous third baseman. I mean,
just terrible.
It's not good. He's a DH. But, Jack, this is the most sound hitter we've had come up in a really long time in this organization.
Yeah. I love, honestly, Bryce is always appointment television, JT too. But Bohm is a guy that I try to make sure I watch every single at bat of because they're just clinics. I mean, you don't really get to see many young guys come up and show the kind of play discipline he has and he does damage within the strike zone, and it's just really impressive. And I ran some of the numbers today on where he's at. So he's top 25 in all of baseball in barrel percentage, which is like barreling up the baseball, hitting the ball hard. He has a hard hit percentage of 57%. So 57% of the time he's hitting the ball 95 plus miles an hour off the bat, which is nuts. I mean, that's just nuts. Just consistently able to put the barrel on the baseball. Doesn't chase out of the zone. So his O swing percentage, which means swinging at pitches outside of the zone, is 22%, which is also in the top 20 of Major League Baseball. He is not just a pull hitter. Obviously, we've seen that.
That's what's been so impressive. I mean, the homer alone, a perfect example, but he just takes the ball where it wants to go.
Yeah, 57% of his batted balls have been to center field, which is nuts. That's a huge percentage. And striking out. I mean, doesn't strike out on top of it. So he's only striking out in 15% of his at-bats, which is top 30 in all of Major League Baseball. Like, the guy...
Again, for a guy who just started playing Major League Baseball. I mean, he's never played the majors before. He's 24 now. Like, that is incredibly impressive to be in that type of rarefied air in terms of where he ranks this season for those types of things at this age with his experience level.
And pitchers will adjust. I mean, they always adjust, and he'll go through his lumps. But, I just don't see them being prolonged because he spits on curveballs out of the zone. Like, he hasn't had any trouble catching up the fastballs. You know, and I kind of wrote it in the piece I put on WIP today. Like, for the longest time, it was Rendon and it was Freeman. Like, sure, Harper is always the best player in Washington, and Acuna is the best player in Atlanta now. But, like, Freeman and Rendon always killed us. Like, I just never have confidence that they were going to be able to get those guys out whenever they came up, and especially when in late game situations where there's like a runner on second and third and one out, and it's like, oh, here comes Rendon, and he's just going to drive a ball to the wall, you know, first pitch, just tattoo it. And that's how I feel about Alec Bohm. Like, I just feel like he's going to be the guy that for 10 years the other NL East teams are just going to hate, because he's going to come up and he's going to jump on whatever reliever they bring in. He doesn't wait around for two strikes and then battle his way back. Like, if there's a first pitch in the zone, he is looking to do damage within the strike zone. And the Phillies for a long time had preached that. Like, they were trying to get guys who would do that. And Bohm's really the first one that has come up and done that. He's very selective. He knows his strike zone. He has very good strike zone recognition. Balls outside of it, he's not going after. And the balls that he knows are within the strike zone, he is attacking, and he is consistently barreling up. He just consistently barrels up the baseball. And I said it when he was coming up, but 325 to 30 homers and 100 RBI, that's what I'm expecting from Alec Bohm every year going forward for the next decade.
I mean, that sounds awesome. I'm with you, man. It's impressive to watch him. You know, again, for someone coming straight up from the minor leagues to be just this confident at the plate, and like you said, his pitch recognition is so impressive. He doesn't swing at bad pitches. It's like, it's apparent when you watch him. It's and he looks like he still is going to grow into that body a little bit. He's still a little lanky. I think you're going to see more power, as he gets a little.
Sure.
So I've just, Jack, I'm with you. I've been so impressed. Now on the flip side, man.
Oh yeah, it's bad.
Can they keep rolling him out there at third? I mean, because he's been legitimately bad, like a liability defensively for this team. What do you do? He's got to stay in the lineup every day, especially coming up, development, all that stuff. Like, he's in the lineup every day. Like, I don't care. He's one of like three guys that I feel like has to be in the lineup every day, no matter what. Like, I that's just the way it is. But what do you do? I mean, can you keep rolling him out there at third every game and just hope?
I guess they don't really have anything to lose, but I don't really see it getting any better. Like, it just seems like his fundamentals are off. Like, he just has, anytime there's a ground ball to his right, I just have no confidence he's going to be able to get it.
I feel like he hasn't gotten one yet. It's unbelievable, Jack. It's unbelievable.
It's like he's never played third base before.
It really does look like that. And the amount of bad throws, the amount of like just poor positioning, he doesn't get his body in front of the ball. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. He cannot throw. Like, it just,
it's horrendous.
It's like he starts thinking about it too much, and then
he clearly does. He is definitely doing the think about where I'm going, like pushing the ball type of thing, instead of just uncorking throws. It's really strange to watch with a major league player. You don't see that very often.
Yeah, well, I don't think I've seen a third baseman as bad as, like, I don't think I've ever seen a third baseman as bad.
He's up there. He's legitimately up there. He's among the worst fielding infielders. Outside of first baseman, he's one of the worst fielding infielders I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's just so bad. I have no idea. You know, like, I don't see the downside to DH-ing him.
I think he should be a DH.
Just let him go ahead.
Edgar Martinez made the Hall of Fame. It can happen. Like, we're all good.
Yeah, if you want to go rake as a DH, sure. Segura can play third. Kingery, if we can get him back on track, and Hazley and Quinn in center field, I mean, sure. There's a path there. I just think that
Gosselin and not Kingery?
Sure.
I agree.
I think they want to make sure it's a failure before they really do anything. And
I think so, too.
I think it's trending in that direction. I mean, it always reminded me a lot of Braun. I mean, Braun came up in 08. And
Jack, that is a perfect, perfect comparison. It's the exact one I was going to make. Ryan Braun is the perfect comparison.
Yeah, I mean, Braun came up and he was a total disaster at third. And then they moved him to the left field, and he was fine in left field. And I think Bohm can catch the ball. The problem isn't catching. It's throwing
fielding. Look, he was horrible, but Rhys Hoskins played a year of left field. Alec Bohm could play left field.
Yeah, he moves better than Rhys. Like, he's just,
that's my point. Exactly. He's got to be able to handle it, like, at least to a certain level, right?
Yeah, I wonder how his arm would play out there. Like, his arm looks strong, but I can't totally tell from third base. He kind of just, like, olays it over there sometimes. So yeah, I would. It's not going to end well. Like he's just he works really hard at third base. I think it's gotten better since when he got drafted, which is saying something. But I just don't know.
A lot, buddy.
Yeah,
that
I just don't know.
That is saying something.
I would get him in left. Well, they can't put him in left field until Kutch is gone. So that
I know.
Also
I know. That's why right now he's a DH. Like what? Why not? Why not DH him? What else are you doing with the DH?
Yeah.
Why not? It's not like they have an everyday DH. It's like Jay Bruce, who's hurt right now, or this or that, or whatever. Just DH Boehm. Because he is a true disaster defensively, and the bat has to be there. All right, a couple more guys I want to ask you about. I think I don't really even need to ask, right? We could both agree Kutch is back, right?
Yeah. Although, did you notice, I think it was Saturday, Swanson tagged up from second base on a ball to left field. And I couldn't tell if it was because McCutchen looked like he was going to get fully behind it and make sure he's going to make a good throw. Like, I couldn't tell if it was that kind of play or if they know or in the scouting report that he's not.
I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if that, you know, obviously, but it wasn't a great throw for what it's worth.
No, and he didn't get much behind it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like he's getting much behind it. And he still looks like he's not moving totally well out there, but the bat definitely looks like it's back. It's looking much quicker. He's starting to drive it a little bit. So yeah, Kutch is definitely back, and he's not walking as much as he did last year.
Or like the last few years, really.
But I do like that he's driving the baseball again. So I'll take it for now from Kutch.
Yeah, I think it's headed in a good direction. Is the point? You know, he's finally, the timing looks like it's back, and again, you would expect anyone who's that age who is off for an entire year and rehabbing an injury at the same time, like, it would make sense that it might take you a little while to get back in the swing of things. I feel pretty good about where he's at offensively. Reese, look, he's, you know, we had the opposite field homer in Boston. We got excited about, hit another, was last night. I think an old school Reese Hoskins homer, like a jack to left field. We're like, oh wow, that's actually going to be a home run. Pretty cool. He's been better. Where you at on Reese?
I have maintained I'm good with Reese. Like I have not changed at all. I think he's batting. I think his last 10 games is .286, .423, two homers and like six RBI. Like,
yeah,
sure.
That'll play.
Listen,
we'd like to see the power back more consistently, but that'll play.
What sucks is like he's actually doing pretty good two hole things. It's just that he's not like Reese Hoskins should be a middle of the lineup bat. Like he's being a good two hole hitter. He's just
a perfect two-hole hitter. It's kind of what you want out of your two-hole hitter.
Exactly. It's just that it's Reese Hoskins. He needs to get back to driving the baseball.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. Though having Boehm and Boehm, you know, just being as ready as quickly as he is does mitigate it a little bit from a lineup perspective. He's given you some of those RBI potential, you know, from later in the lineup. But he's still batting seventh or eighth, depending on the night.
And
move him up, by the way.
Well,
like, what is?
But here's the thing, and here's why I don't think he'll do it, and I think it makes sense, because then he can kind of get trapped in the three batter minimum rule. Like I'm cool batting him six to keep DD five and keep it from
that's fine. Sure,
right, lefty, righty. So if it goes,
and look, DD doesn't. I'm not saying DD needs to be moved down. I mean, DD's been great.
DD's batting over 300.
Yeah, I think he's like 299 maybe or somewhere right around there. Yeah. And 289. He's a 344 OBP at 470 slugging. I mean, Didi's been great. Didi's been everything you want. He's been, other than that one play in the Toronto game, he has been, or was it the Boston game? Whatever.
No, it was Toronto.
It was Toronto. I was right the first time. Yeah. I mean, other than that one play, like we've talked about it, but a joy to watch play shortstop. Makes things that shouldn't be as easy as they look easy. I'm all in for Didi being here for more years. Like I'm so in on Didi. He is super fun to watch. The homer he hit last night was just a rocket. Like one of those ones where you could tell the right fielder didn't think it was going to be a home run off the bat. And then like starts to go after it. And he's like, oh, never mind. This is definitely going out of the park. So it was one of those ones. I've been really impressed with Didi. Anyone else? I want to get to the pitching in a sec, but anyone else in the lineup you want to talk about before I move on to pitching?
I mean, Bryce had a 470 foot bomb. Yeah. I mean,
it's just like old hat now. I mean,
I know. It just sucks. We're not getting this for two things. We're not getting this for 162. Like, I just want, I want to see what they would have been like over 162.
Me too. I want to see if he could beat those 2015 numbers and have that season to point to and be like, I told all of you, all right? I told you.
Yes. And it feels like it, it just feels like they're wasting an MVP Harper year. And JT is actually, he's been struggling a little bit recently. So it would be nice to get him back on track a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, obviously started out hot. Look, I didn't expect him to, he was on pace for what, like 100 something home runs in a normal season early on.
Yeah, he had a higher home run to batting coming up.
You know, home run per a bat.
Yeah, per a bat than Bonds did in 02.
Yeah, so that probably wasn't going to continue. But
no, especially as JT, a catcher.
Yeah, JT will be fine. All right, pitching, from what we saw this weekend, I definitely wanted to get your thoughts on Zach Eflin, because for me, he's been the one guy of, you know, like you said at the top when we were talking about the team, Nolan Wheeler, obviously Nola wasn't great this weekend, but Nolan Wheeler have been really good in giving you what you need, especially Wheeler, who has not had a bad start yet. I mean, he has been very, very, very consistent. Of the other three guys, Eflin's been the one to me who has flashed the most, but it just seems like he can't put it all together. We're still getting these between five and six innings. He'll strike some guys out. He's going to give up 3-4 runs, and it's just, it feels like there's more there with Eflin, but we're not getting it.
Yeah, well, he's just been inconsistent, and it seems like he's taking a little bit to find his mechanics in a start. Like, if you notice the first three innings last night, he was missing with his fastball middle. He just wasn't finding the right release point. And going back to the Boston start, I felt like he was cutting himself off a little bit. And then as the game goes on, he kind of figures it out. And, you know, sometimes that's what pitchers are. And I don't want to put him into the ace category because he's definitely not. But a lot of ace-level pitchers, the old saying is you got to get to them early because they figure it out and they go from there. And that's kind of how I feel about Eflin. Unfortunately, it takes him like three innings to find it and not the one that most aces need to find it in. But I really like Eflin. I mean, he's hard to consistently square up because he's 95 with sink. And then I think the slider's a good pitch. And I would like to see him develop more of the changeup. I'd like to see him get to where Nola is with his changeup, where you feel like he'd throw it in any count, because I think a 95-mile-an-hour sinker paired with like an 85, 83-mile-an-hour changeup is just really, really hard on hitters. And it seems like he has really easy mechanics, so he should be able to repeat it and consistently throw over strikes. So I'd like to see a little bit more out of the changeup. But overall, like, I just think he's a really good 4-5. I don't know.
Like, I mean, if you're looking, let's say, to next season, Nola, Wheeler, Howard, Eflin, like, that's good.
Yes.
Like, you can go to war with that.
Yeah. Now, if they didn't give away Connor Siebold, maybe he could be in that five spot.
At least they got cash back, Jack. Yeah. Don't forget the important stuff.
At least they stayed under the luxury tax.
Thank goodness.
The things that really matter.
When I heard rumors of the trade, my first thought was, oh, no, it's going to put us over the tax. What are we going to do? I should have known that they would never let such a thing happen, Jack.
I know.
They would never let such a thing happen.
Love this organization.
it's super fun.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Eflin's definitely a guy that 4-5, he's going to, on most nights, give you 5-6 innings with the potential for more. I mean, we've seen him go in streaks where 2 out of 3 starts, he's throwing complete games. So he's definitely a guy that can get hot. I just think right now his mechanics are a little bit off early in games. I like to see him maybe change up his pregame routine. Sometimes that helps a little bit. But yeah, I'm cool with Eflin. He's not going to overpower you, but 5 innings, 3 runs or less sounds about right for Eflin.
All right, what else you got? You got anything else on the pitching staff or it's take bag time?
Yeah, well, I mean, pitching staff wise, I could not believe that Jojo Romero hit 97.
I meant to bring up Romero. I knew I forgot something for my rundown. Jojo was nasty. And granted, it was in a blowout and a meaningless inning, but dude, he looked great. I was super, and it's super fun too. Does not feel like a baseball pitcher when you see him stride out to the mound, but he was great.
Yeah. And like, my thought was like, what the hell was Austin Davis doing on this team when Jojo Romero was right there and could have given you at least something? I mean, like, what are we doing here? 97 had seemed like he had a pretty good feel for 3 of his pitches. Like, that's something you can work with. I could not believe that we kept Austin Davis around for so long when Jojo Romero.
And it's the same thing with that, like you said before, but same thing with Blake Parker. Like, why wasn't Parker on the roster to start this season? Like, it's clear that they have misevaluated some of these relievers.
100%. So definitely disappointed in that. Henry looked really good. You know, the thing that I liked the most about him, and he said it kind of post game, was like, I've been in this position a lot. You know, he's been coming into high leverage spots for that Red Sox team. I mean, he's on the World Series team. The team last year was pretty decent. So, I really like what I saw from him. And honestly, my main problem with Heath Embry is I keep wanting to call him Alan Embry. Remember, because I love that Red Sox.
I loved him. He was an Indian too back in the day.
Yeah, well, that 04 Red Sox team I just loved, and I keep wanting to call. Yeah. I've watched so many documentaries in the 04 Red Sox. I keep wanting to call him Alan Embry.
He was a nasty lefty. I loved Alan Embry. I was in
Alan,
Alan
Embry and Mike Timlin. I always thought were like the same guy. But I know it's gonna sound like an overreaction, but I trust Heath Embry with my life. I
saw you tweet that.
I'm putting full confidence in Heath Embry.
I actually chuckled when I read that tweet. It was very clever.
That's my goal. Tommy Hunter looked nasty last night.
What a miracle. Two strikeouts, clean inning. What an amazing night for Tommy Hunter.
Hey, Tommy's looked pretty good recently.
Yeah, I'm sure every time out he's going to be locked down. So
he's not going to be locked down, but I would say on most nights he's going to be pretty good. Okay. Deolis Guerra, DFA, thank God.
Thank God. Saving Joe Girardi from himself, nothing else.
Yeah. And my final thought on anything pitching. Actually, no, I got another one after this. But did you see six? Did you see six, though?
Yeah, sadly, yeah. I saw six, though.
I'm sorry.
It's a real,
kick. Holy smokes, man. What would we be doing if we had, Sixto?
Oh, my God. We would be losing our minds right now.
Who was drafted signed internationally. And the first thing you hear is 18 throwing 100 miles an hour, and everyone's like, the next Pedro.
And it's like easy. It just looks easy when he does it. It's effortless that he just pumps in triple digits. Ugh. Like, cool, man. Great. Ugh.
He's so good.
I know. Pitching Ninja, for any baseball fan on yours doesn't follow Pitching Ninja, you would be wise to do so. It's a really fun account, but he basically just tweets out all kinds of GIFs and like overlays and stuff like that. Did you see the one he put out with the three pitch sequencing from Sixto with 100 miles just wedged in the middle? It was like, it was unfair. It was not a fair at bat.
Yeah, and he's definitely bulked up. Like, he's not the skinny kid anymore. He's pretty ripped. So, yeah, that's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. If they don't sign they don't sign JT, I'm going to be in a dark place after watching
him. Yeah, I think we all are, Jack. I think we all are.
He's so good. Two more things here in my little mailbag. I'm mad at Cole Hamels, and it's not for blowing the 2009 World Series.
I was going to say, when are you not? I feel like you and Cole, this is the slander is real.
So this is not for blowing the 2009 World Series, but, he has been working with Max Fried and teaching him how to, add and subtract on his pitches. So why Max Fried has gone to another level, I think we can trace directly back to Cole Hamels, and I don't like that. I don't know if it was worth the $18 million the Braves are paying him. But Max Fried
worth something.
Max Fried is untouchable, and it is all Cole Hamels' fault.
Okay, we'll add that into the con list for when they decide to retire Cole's number. Whether the pros and cons of it, that'll go in the con list.
I will be out there with the Fandemic crew.
Oh, I know you will be
booing. I'm not going to boo Cole Hamels. I loved Cole Hamels, but I think it's ridiculous to retire his number. But other thing, the draft order is not being determined by record, which hurts.
What?
Yeah, it's not determined by record. It's determined.
What is it determined by? It's a lottery or something?
It's record and last year. So like it's like a mixture of both.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. So I'm very sad. I even
had Yak for Jack. I was trying to think of a good Kumar one, like lose more for Kumar. It didn't work out well, but I was actually working on these things. Yak for Jack.
Yeah, Jack Leiter
Jr. Now we can't just Yak for Jack.
Well, we can still get Judge Fabian, which would be amazing.
I really want Kumar Rocker. That guy feels like a star to me.
Oh, yeah. He just looks like a big game
pitcher.
He
looks it. The name isn't a star name. Like, everything about that guy just feels like a star to me.
I know.
I'm all in on Kumar Rocker.
I love him. But probably not going to happen.
If the Phillies had lost on Sunday and we had recorded a pod, like, that was going to be my whole intro, was, all right, what are we going with? But they didn't, and I was less sad today than I was yesterday.
So. Yes. And final thing.
Let's put it this way. I spent way too much time trying to think of, like, fun pun-type things, and I got nothing for Kumar Rocker. Like, I did horrible. So
maybe you should leave the puns to me. Maybe I'll...
Well, give me one. I'm ready to roll with it, you know?
Well, we're not getting Kumar now, so there's no point. And my final thing is that a friend of the podcast, Pat McCarthy, stopped by Four Fingers yesterday, and he also loved High Hops. So if you're looking for a nice session IPA to enjoy with some Phillies bullpen losses, you'd be wise to pick up some Four Fingers.
There's many of those to enjoy it with.
Yes.
And they're being canned soon, I believe, right? We're on the road to canned them.
They are on the road to being canned.
Yes.
That's going to be major. There's plenty of Phillies related stuff on the first design of the cans. So look out for that. And beer.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait to have them in my fridge at home, and I can't wait to drink more of them because it is a lovely, wonderful beer. Four Fingers Brewing, check it out, is the official brewery of the High Hopes podcast.
Yes.
All right, Jeff, my final thought. And for anyone, we're recording this Monday evening.
Yes.
So if you have the opportunity to listen to it tonight, maybe early tomorrow morning, tomorrow at noon.
Oh, yeah.
There's something going down. As I'm sure it will be streamed, WIP, whatever. Jack Fritz will be pitching to Mr. Luck into a home run himself, Elliott Shore Parks. And all I have to say, Jack, is that I, on the radio today, said that I would bet my house, my actual house that I own, that I have a mortgage on, that I would bet my house that Elliott will not get a hit off you. So, Jack, you better not make me look bad. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. But I saw his bat speed today in his video, and I'm just fine. It's going to be no problem.
Good. It shouldn't.
It's really slow.
To quote John Ritchie, it looks like a child holding a bat that's too big for him, was what Ritchie said.
Yeah, like, so Elliott's in his 30s. Like, how does he look so weak?
He looked really weak, and I agree. Like, it was like almost like the bat was going to fall out of his hands as he was swinging it. But
yeah, I wonder,
for what it's worth, he's incredibly confident. Like,
I know.
Way too confident.
I know. I wonder, like, if I jam him, like, his hands are just going to be stinging.
That's what he said to me when we did the Go Birds pod, and he was – asking me, he's like, well, I hit it off a pitching machine. How's that any different from Jack? I'm like, do you realize that Jack's not going to throw it in the same spot every time, right? Like, it's not just going to be like right down the middle in the same spot, like a pitching machine, man. This is a human being you're going against. Like,
and it's going to move. It's going to move. So, yeah.
And I said, yeah, and exactly. It's going to move in many ways.
I'm very nervous that I'm going to hurt myself, but whatever.
Well, I think that's really the biggest concern for you is you're going to try and gun it up there so hard that you're going to tear your arm up.
But oh, yeah.
Let's avoid that.
Dr. James Andrews is going to be on speed dial.
Here's what I will say. I think if it's a choice of tearing your arm up or giving up a hit to Elliott, tear your arm up.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Okay. Yeah, I would. The High Hopes podcast would be no more. And I would probably move to Alaska.
I mean, Jack might break as a human if Elliott does anything good against him. So we need to root against that happening.
Yeah, yeah. It would not be great at all. So
all right, tomorrow.
I'm dreading it. I'm nervous.
Go in knowing you're 1,000 times better than him, and just do what you do.
I can't wait to see his reaction to a curveball.
I can't either. I told him he's more likely to wet himself than get a hit. So,
wow.
Feel good about that.
Wow.
All right. Good luck tomorrow, buddy.
Thanks.
For you. High Hopes Nation, you can watch it. I'm sure it'll be streamed everywhere. I'm sure Jack will tweet out. So check that out. And hey, Jack, how about this? Maybe the Phillies win some games this week. Wouldn't that be cool?
Listen, I said it earlier. I'll say it again. They're going on a run. You heard it. You heard it here first. Just trust me.
We'll be back later in the week. I hope you're right. We'll talk about it. How about that? All right. Good luck tomorrow, buddies. Spread some salt. See you later.